Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape. And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Bing Y World Class Market, Brennan Smoke Shop, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmower, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Well, it's up to Jackie Bradley. Ripped a double his last time up. He's 1-for-4. 1-2, and a ground ball to second. Gordon's got it. And that does it. So the Red Sox rally falls short. 10-8 the final score, and the Red Sox leave Seattle 1-3 on their way to Oakland.
Well, that didn't take long. Reality check right out of the gate for the 2019 Boston Red Sox. 1-3, they go in Seattle over the weekend, and the truth is, really, they should have been 0-4. They stole that game on Friday night as well. Pinch hit three-run homer by Mitch Moreland, Red Sox rally. They were down 6-1 in that game, if I remember right, Murray. Didn't you work Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were down 6-1, came back and win the game, but otherwise 1-3. They were not two games under 500 all of last season when they won 108 and 119, already 1-3. On to Oakland tonight for a game against the A's. David Price will make his debut. And so here's the obvious question. What's wrong with the Red Sox? You tell me. If you watch them this weekend, and I understand, they open on the road, on the West Coast, no less. Hard to really sort of dig in sometimes if you're a fan. So we'll catch you up on as much as we can here during the next hour. We'll take you right up until 7 o'clock. Celtics tonight are at 8. Is that right?
7:30.
Okay. So we'll take you up till Celtics pregame at 7 o'clock with Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell. And then you'll have the game right here on 98.5 against the Miami Heat. In the interim, 617-779-0985. If you needed a reality check, and some of you did, I'm not going to sit here and rub your noses in it, but I told you, I thought they were going to get off to a bad start. What do you want me to tell you? This was sort of predictable. Years like last year are highly unusual. Everything went right for them. Everything went right. Right out of the gate. And I'll ask our producer, Jimmy Stewart, when he has a minute, just give me a wave when you have a second. We're going to play some Alex Cora comments for you about the way the Red Sox played over the weekend in Seattle. And Cora acknowledges the reality. They didn't play well all the way around. In fact, they could have easily lost all four games without Moreland's heroics. And I'm not telling you I'm worried about the Red Sox in the big picture, because I'm not. When you look at their starting pitching, we know that they are better than they pitched over the weekend. So then the question becomes, why are they starting as badly as they are? Cora himself is drawing some lines and some connections from some of the events, or rather Cora is dismissing some of the connections that people are drawing from a slow spring training, an easy spring training pace, to the fact that the Red Sox did not start out well. They did the same thing a year ago. I will tell you the big difference between the Red Sox this year and last year is that they've won. They don't have a new manager. They don't have as much to prove. And so when they pace themselves during spring training, everything is on the geared towards October now. Last year, they still had to win during the regular season, at least in their minds. They had something to prove during the regular season under a new manager. Now they don't. And I just don't know how you can replicate that. It's one of the reasons I picked the Yankees to win the division this year. They didn't start out great either. So let's see how that one shakes out. But as it pertains to Cora, Jimmy, if we could play the exchange that he had with Peter Abraham, I think, initially, and Sean McAdam was in there too, about the speculation that the program in the spring is responsible for the way that the pitchers are pitching now. Here's what Cora said.
It's easy to second guess now, you know, what we did. Nobody second guessed us last year. It's a program. You have to be disciplined. So that's the way I see it, you know. If people think that, you know, they didn't start too many games or they have too many innings, they should get back to what we did last year in spring training. We play until October 28th. And the previous year when I got here, everybody was talking about how they ran out of bullets in October against the Houston Astros.
So Cora sounds really defensive about this out of the gate, as if to say, well, you're already questioning me now. We're 1-3. You're going to question me? And I would say, well, this is sort of how it goes. When you win and then you come back the next year, we don't just forget everything going forward because you've won a World Series. The next year starts, you play games, you're expected to win again. Not to mention the fact that they have a lot of money tied up in this team, and some of these guys they've re-signed. And we'll get to Xander Bogaerts a little bit later in the show, probably in the next segment. But if you watch the weekend, my question to you is, are you worried about the season? Or are you just chalking it up to a bad start? For me, in all honesty, it's nothing more than a bad start. I told you, I don't think they're coming home from this trip with a winning record. I said before they started that I thought they would come home 5-6. Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if 4-7 were in play. But do I think the Red Sox are going to miss the playoffs or something? No, of course I don't.
No, that's way too drastic. If you look up and down the standings throughout Major League Baseball right now, it's like everything's upside down. The Astros have got off to a bad start. The Yankees have also got off to a bad start. Obviously the Red Sox have. The Braves are winless. Like, a lot of good teams have had a rough start here. It doesn't mean they're going to miss the playoffs, and it's a complete disaster. There's some red flags, but people shouldn't be completely freaking out.
Nonetheless, Cora and Dana Lavangie, the pitching coach, did something this weekend that I didn't like and that I thought was wildly out of character. We'll get to that in just a second. It pertains to the catching situation, but first we'll take a couple of your calls. Derek is in Foxborough. Derek, go ahead.
Yeah, I too thought they would get off to a slow start because, you know, MLB didn't really do them any favors with the schedule. To have to open the season on a two-week West Coast road trip is kind of ridiculous. When the Yankees opened up at home, all the big teams opened up at home. You know, the pitchers are still taxed from that playoff run. So, you know, I think that's why they're getting off to a slow start.
Yeah, Derek, I'm not going to bitch about the schedule. It is what it is. You've known you were going to open on the West Coast for a long time. Seattle opened in Japan, played two games over there, and flew back. And the Red Sox were the team that wasn't ready to go. They were on West Coast time already. They played the games out there against the Cubs in Arizona. So let's not go making excuses for them. And Cora himself said something after the game about this. Jimmy Stewart, if we could grab that, it's Cora number four, I think. Is that right? Cora was asked about the travel starting on the road, going out to play the Cubs out there. He was asked about this. Here's what he said.
Let's be honest. I'm not going to use this as an excuse, but, I mean, yesterday I felt it, you know, like the whole traveling and getting up early and all that. And, you know, talking to Michael, the guy that, you know, the sports science guy that we have, he mentioned, like, from today on, we should have a few days that the energy should be up. But it's tough. I mean, we're not making excuses. You know, we still have to play good baseball. But, you know, Arizona and come here, I know it helped us out, but it hasn't been easy.
Okay, I didn't love the comment. I didn't love the comment. I mean, to me, I heard that one and I said, you got to be kidding me. The season just started. We're worried about the travel. That you had open on the West Coast. You had to be out in Arizona. Well, too bad. The season just started. They knew it was coming. And if Cora didn't want to make it an excuse, he shouldn't have mentioned it at all. Don't even mention it. Don't mention it. It's part of the deal. Whatever the schedule says is where you go and play. You start bitching about it. Now you're already psyching yourself out. Here's the other thing I didn't love over the weekend. And to me, this is probably the more significant of the two. I'll give Cora a pass on the travel comment because I think overall Cora has been a pretty straight shooter and he's done a good job. But over the weekend, Blake Swihart caught Eduardo Rodriguez on Saturday night. After the game, Dana Lavangie, and now I'm reading, I think this was in the Globe. I think this was in Peter Abraham's story. I cut and pasted it naturally. I forgot to put down where I took it from. But Dana Lavangie was left wondering why Rodriguez and catcher Blake Swihart did not follow instructions. Quote, I don't know, he said. I thought we had a great plan going in. I really did. And then Cora criticized Rodriguez, and he's been on Rodriguez pretty good during here during the Rodriguez's time and or Cora's time in Boston. That he has criticized Eduardo Rodriguez early in camp for not putting guys away enough. And Dennis Eckersley during yesterday's game also made reference to the fact that Rodriguez and Swihart made a poor pitch decision on the home run that Jay Bruce hit in the Saturday night game that really blew the game open and tilted it in favor of the Mariners. Here's what Eck said during the broadcast yesterday. But
Alex Cora and Dana Labanji were not happy with the pitch selection last night, and particularly the pitch selection on Jay Bruce. Wanted to see more change-ups to the left-handers and a better game plan, although they have been impressed by the way Seattle swung the bats.
Well, God knows, E-Rod threw 35 change-ups last night. He just didn't throw the change-up to Jay Bruce. That one pitch cost him. I mean, I think somebody has to take charge of E-Rod when he takes the mound. You got to have the guy behind the plate tell him what to do if they want. That's the game plan.
So that line in particular, that last part of it, I think someone needs to take charge with E-Rod on the mound and you know, show him what to do. So this tells me that they don't trust Eduardo Rodriguez to make decisions on the mound, that the catcher's got to hold him by the hand. And to me, that was an indictment of Blake Swihart. And I told you this before the season started, keep an eye on the catching situation. What I believe, I can't tell you for sure that I know it. I can only tell you what I believe. And what I believe is that Alex Cora would have preferred Sandy Leon on this roster. Managers like veteran catchers. They put a premium on defense behind the plate. Just about every manager I've ever met has put a premium on defense behind the plate. There isn't a manager out there that wants a guy back there that can't catch. Okay, not one. So they end up with Swihart, and I personally think it's the right time to find out on Blake Swihart. You have a good team. You have a veteran team. It's early in the year. Sandy Leon made it through waivers. He's at AAA, so you can always bring him back. And if you can't, you can always find another Sandy Leon. My guess is that Dave Dombrowski wanted to keep Blake Swihart. Cora would have preferred Sandy Leon. They started with Swihart. So in the first game, Eduardo Rodriguez has difficulty, and Swihart gets thrown under the bus by the pitching coach? And I've known Dana Lavangi a long time, and I like Dana, but I was surprised by it. Really? All of a sudden, I don't know why they didn't follow the game plan. I told them, why didn't they follow instructions? We told them this. They didn't do it. So that, to me, was the kind of thing we didn't have all of last year. There were times where Cora was very blunt about the way players had made decisions on the bases, for example. I remember a time Rafael Devers made a poor base running decision, and Cora had said, look, he made a mistake. He knows it. It's not the kind of thing we can do because where we want to go, we can't have those mistakes. Hopefully, we'll fix it up. So I always felt there was a measure of support for the player. This time, I felt like they were throwing Cora under the bus, and now it feels like, throwing Swihart under the bus, and now it feels like Cora's on Eduardo Rodriguez, too. He was on him in spring training, and he's on him again, about setting the tone and not putting guys away. So it feels to me like there's already a frustration there with the manager, that you say 3 games, that's all it took to build that? And I look at it, and I say, it had to be there before then. He must have wanted Leon to start the year. He didn't get him, but throwing Swihart under the bus is not the right move. We got to find out if Blake Swihart can play, and now's the time to do it. 617-779-0985. When we come back, we'll get into that Xander Bogaerts contract, the signing. In fact, I think the Red Sox will be having a press briefing out on the West Coast here in just a little bit. And I'll tell you what my initial reaction was when I heard about the deal.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape. And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random 2x found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Tim Beckham's hit his second homer of the season.
Edwin Encarnacion.
Bradley can only watch, and it's gone.
Just did Tim Beckham get him again?
Tim Beckham got him again!
The fourth
of the afternoon for Seattle. A high fly ball to deep left field. Benintendi measuring off the wall, and that one's gone.
And often needs only one, but this one's stung. Gone! Of course, they hit five yesterday, and they're at it again.
I mean, what is going on? I mean, my goodness.
And forget about this one. Another home run. Goodness gracious.
So it's going to be me.
Hit it deep into the corner. That ball gets out of here. Wow. Back, back, and gone. Three-run homer for Jay Bruce.
That's a backbreaker.
0-1 from Porcello. There's a shot. Deep right field, and that is gone. Boy, the home run ball has killed the Red Sox starters.
You make a mistake, and it's Bridge.
You're not seeing very good command from the Red Sox.
How about this?
Backing up Betts. He's turning, and it's gone. Another home run. Jay Bruce, his second in as many days.
That last comment by Alex Speer. Jimmy, can we play just the end of that again? Oh, I'll say. Boy, that's hysterical.
You're not seeing very good command from the Red Sox.
How about this?
Backing up Betts. He's turning, and it's gone. Another home run. Jay Bruce is second in as many days.
Jimmy, give me just a... You're not seeing good command from the Red Sox, and stop it there.
You make a mistake, and it's Bridge.
You're not seeing very good command from the Red Sox.
I'll say. You think? Based on what, the 11 home runs in four games? Like, if I read the numbers to you, you wouldn't believe it. Like, and I'm laughing about it because, and Murray, let me ask you, Jim Murray's alongside as usual. The 11 home runs that the Red Sox gave up and the beating that they took on the mound, are you concerned that their pitching isn't good enough?
No, not at all. No. I just think that they're behind because, you know, how many reps did they really get in spring training? It didn't feel like they really did all that much, you know? And maybe there was a bit of a hangover from the deep run and winning the World Series last year. But no, you know, for the rest of the year, no, they'll be fine. I do think the ball's juiced, though. I mean, anytime you look up, if you're watching any highlights or you're scrolling through Twitter, the ball's going out of every ballpark throughout Major League Baseball. And you get guys like Malik Smith, you know, hitting one off of Aldi or the second pitch of the game on Friday night. Who that Malik Smith, are you kidding me? There's something up.
And Murray, that's one of the, you know, that's one of the bigger ballparks in the big league.
Right.
It's tough to hit home runs there typically. So I also am not concerned about the starting pitching. They have good pitchers. Okay, they have good pitchers. So I'm not alarmed about that. But this weekend, again, I think the start was predictable. It was predictable. Last year, in a lot of ways, was almost too good to be true. It just went so well for them. When you add in all the elements, they were due to get their brains beat in on the first weekend of the year. I told you, I think they're going to have a bad trip. I want to get to the Bogarts contract, too, here. We'll do that in 1 second. Chris is in a car. Chris, what do you got, pal?
Hey, Tony, I was thinking about the starting pitch, and I was thinking three times through the rotation, and I don't know if that's too long before you start to get worried. I don't know your thoughts. And I thought the bullpen this weekend only giving up, I believe, 12 runs. I don't know what your feelings was on the bullpen this weekend. Thanks, Tony.
Okay, so, Chris, we'll get to the bullpen a little bit later. I don't know what the right answer is on the pitching. I mean, if it's three turns, you know, so now you're talking 15 starts. Honestly, I'm not even sure that they could have a bad month. I mean, the starters could have a full bad month. I don't think they're going to. But my opinion of the pitchers on this staff is not going to change based on the weekend. Okay? I don't believe that. Now, could there be a different kind of change? Maybe, which brings me to Robbie and Stoneham. Robbie, what do you got?
Hi. Well, first, I wonder your opinion. Who do you think should catch? And also, I was wondering, with things are going, you know, now that they have, last year everything went so good. Like, if they got a little controversy, like, already going on, like, how are they going to handle it?
So, Robbie, with regard to what they've done at the catching situation so far, Vasquez and Swihart, are you in favor or no?
Yeah, I'd like to see them give them a chance.
Okay, so that's where I am. So, you know, they signed Vasquez to an extension before the, They signed Vasquez, I think, to a 3-year deal before last season. And I think the deal starts this year. So clearly they thought enough of Vasquez to sign him to a multi-year deal. And they didn't sign Leon to a multi-year deal. So they looked at Vasquez as their starter. Now, Leon is a good receiver, but he can't hit. So if there were ever a time to find out about Blake Swihart, now is the time to do it. Now. And so Cora and Dana Lavangi and the pitchers on that staff, if they favor Leon, they're just going to have to live with it for a while and give the kid a chance. They obviously don't like Swihart, but can we find out? Because in the second part of last year, I thought Swihart caught pretty well. Ron's in Texas. Go ahead, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, Tony?
Good.
I actually thought that starting the season off in the West Coast was a good thing for this team. I honestly thought that. I mean, you're coming out of spring training in Florida. You work your way over to Arizona to play the Cubs. You have all the time in the world to get acclimated, to get prepared for a game. And Seattle just came in from Japan at that point. I really think that this could help in mid-season, like when you get a run going on, because it seems like, you know, when we get into the mid part of the season, we're playing 28 games out of the month, and now you're hopping a flight late night or a Sunday morning game to head out to the West Coast. That's when you complain about the schedule at that point. Like, not that I'm accepting the complaining or anything, but I thought that this could be a good thing for the team, and they should have jumped all over this opportunity. And to go on your point with the catching situation.
So, Ron, I'm gonna stop you there. Let's stick to one topic at a time. And with regard to the West Coast trip, you know, I wish Cora hadn't said what he said last night. I don't want to make an excuse, but, you know, I'm feeling it a little. We're traveling all over the place. The season just started. Okay, the season just started. And I understand the end of, you know, spring training for these guys is a grind because by the time it ends, they all want to get out of there. Then they went to Arizona for a couple of days. Then they had to fly up to Seattle. I get it. I get it. But if you don't want it to come off as an excuse, don't say it. As soon as you mention it, it's going to come off as an excuse. So you can't say, I don't want it to come off as an excuse, but, because as soon as, before you even get to the but, it comes off as an excuse. So I'm not putting any stock in that whatsoever. The Red Sox chose an approach with their roster this year, coming off of a championship, and the starting pitching wasn't ready to go. The lineup looks pretty good overall. Fine. I shouldn't, you know, good. But the starting pitching wasn't ready to go. Before we get to headlines, I do want to mention the Xander Bogaerts contract because I think it's a big story. When I saw the extension for Bogaerts last night, and I think it was Evan Drellick who first reported that Bogaerts had agreed to terms on a multi-year deal. Drellick, who's unemployed, by the way. Is that right still?
Basically, yeah, he fills in at the competitor.
Okay, but he doesn't have a full-time job.
That is correct.
So good for him. Like, talk about getting a scoop when he didn't have to get a scoop. Guy's out there trying to get a regular gig, and he breaks the story on the Bogaerts contract negotiation. So I heard it, and I was pleasantly surprised. I thought with Xander, with Scott Boras as his agent, that there was very little chance of Xander Bogaerts remaining here if he didn't have a deal before the year. I thought he would hit the market and he'd be gone. Bogaerts is due to meet with the media out there like any minute. I think it was 3:30 Pacific time. He's doing a press conference with Dave Dombrowski out in Oakland. I'm not sure we'll have any sound for you before the end of the program. I highly doubt that we will. So we'll have to tackle that one tomorrow. But I'm eager to hear Bogaerts explain why he agreed to sign now. Because certainly the free agent market isn't what it used to be. Scott Boras has a history of taking clients to the market. They didn't do that here, and Bogaerts remains. As for the money, again, pleasantly surprised. The deal starts next year, 6 years, $120 million. There is an opt-out in there, so Bogaerts can leave after 3 years, I think it is. Even so, I'll take the 3 years. I think it's a good deal for the Red Sox. Now, if you're asking me, he's not quite a $20 million player, even in this market. I'd put his value at somewhere 16 to 18, somewhere in that range. I think this is a little high, but such is life. You pay out the nose a little bit if you want to get a guy to sign early. They did with Bogaerts. I'm glad he's here. He's probably the fourth or fifth best shortstop in the game. Other guys are going to pass him in the next couple of years, whether it's Francisco Lindor with the Indians or Carlos Correa with the Astros. Those guys are going to get more money, and they deserve money, and so they deserve more, rather, and so does Corey Seager with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Okay, I think all those guys are better players than Bogaerts. But he's a good player. They're obviously facing a free agent crunch. They've now signed Sale. They've now signed Bogaerts, which raises the question of, is this now Mookie Betts or J.D. Martinez and not both. And so I ask you, if you had to pick and factor in age and contract length and all of that, Mookie or J.D., Betts or Martinez, long-term deal after the year, who are you signing and why? Murray's get your headlines, and then we'll touch on one of the good developments for the Red Sox over the weekend.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape.
And the wrench. And the towel. More duct tape. A hammer. This random tube I found in the basement. Another bucket. More tape. A little more tape.
Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter. The show the Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
It is still early. There's a towering shot down the left field line. Looking for the corner. And that ball is gone. It's three-run homer.
First pitch, Bridge.
J.D. Martinez with his second home run here in Seattle.
Yeah, add it to the list. That first pitch swinging. Ball leaves the ballpark.
Time now for the Rodenheiser Heat Zone. Who's hot? Brought to you by our friends at Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric. J.D. Martinez, easy choice. 7 hits, 2 homers, 7 RBI in the 4-game series. 7 RBI in the 4-game series. Didn't he lead the majors in RBI last year? 130 RBI, or at least the American League, right? So J.D. Martinez is your key performer there in the Rodenheiser Heat Zone. We'll get back to your calls here in just a moment. 617-779-0985. Martinez obviously had a terrific weekend. I told you I was going to touch on something that went right for the Red Sox here over the weekend. Martinez was one thing, but he's not what I was talking about. We'll get to that in 1 second. First, Justin's in Shrewsbury on Rafael Devers. Go ahead, Justin.
Hi. So I just wanted to see what you thought of Rafael Devers' spot in the lineup. Three of the four games he's played in either the three hole or the two hole. And then Saturday night he played, like, I think he batted 6. So I think he could have a good year. And if they keep him up in the top, definitely beneficial. Thanks.
Okay. So, Justin, look, what I would tell you with regard to Devers is overall, he had a good first series. There weren't a ton of guys that played well, really, you could say, in that series. And I'm talking about in the entirety of the series, but Devers was good. J.D. Martinez obviously was good. And then the rest of them, I think, were kind of hit or miss. You could probably throw Moreland on the list just because of the nature of the hit on Friday night, the pinch hit 3-run home run. But, you know, he was 3-for-12, I think, in the series. It's not like he lit it up all the way around. But the one, you know, home run, the pinch hit home run was an absolutely massive, massive blow. As for the surprise of the weekend, and I don't think there's any question, I think we would all agree on this, and I'm eager to get Jim Murray's interpretation of this as well, but on Friday night, in the game the Red Sox won, after Moreland had hit the 3-run pinch hit home run, Matt Barnes went out to close. Here's how his inning went.
0-2. Swing! And it is! She struck him out! What a comeback for the Red Sox tonight here in the West Coast! Their first magnificent come-from-behind win of the season. They were down 6-1. Barnes locks it up, 1-2-3 style.
Boy, Barnes looked good, too. That means a lot to this club. Bullpen does the job.
Bullpen was outstanding. From 6-1 down, Red Sox beat the Mariners.
Okay, so, Murray, I heard you talking about this a little bit on Saturday, which is why I wanted to touch base with you about it.
Sure.
You were surprised that Barnes closed.
I was. Yeah, I figured it was going to be Ryan Brazier. I mean, based on just the talk and, reading the beat folks that cover the team, it felt like Ryan Brazier was going to be the go-to. Then again, it's not like Alex Cora ever made any kind of confirmation as to who the closer was going to be. But it just felt like it was supposed to be Brazier. So when it was Barnes, it was like, oh. And he started the first batter, what, 3-1? I was like, oh, Jesus, here we go. But he was pretty damn good.
So I'm glad you brought that part up, because I heard you talking about it on Saturday. And you said, well, even so, he fell behind 3-1 on the first guy. So I went back and watched the inning again today. And I'll tell you, he finished strong. And I don't want to get bogged down into too many details and micromanage it in the first outing of the year. I'm not a huge Barnes guy, never have been. He's a capable, good major league reliever. I don't like him in the eighth or ninth inning. I just don't think he commands the ball well enough and throws strikes well enough. And in this game, if you go back and watch, He faced three batters. He got them all out. 3-1, he fell behind in the first one. He struck out the last two. But where he got impressive is when he started throwing his fastball. So he started all three guys with breaking balls. He fell behind two out of the three. When he got ahead with the breaking ball, it was great.
Well, it's always been this guy's issue.
Okay,
just throw gas.
But you know what? They closed the same way with Kimbrel. Kimbrel used to throw breaking ball first pitch all the time. And it's almost like, let me plant the seed now. And to me, it's ass backwards. Like, I don't like pitching that way. I think that it's backwards. And when you throw 96, 97, start with your fastball. But they don't trust his ability to spot it. That's what they're telling you. So that they say, well, yeah, he throws 96 or 97, but he's liable to hit the middle of the plate. So we're going to start breaking ball. We're going to plant that in the hitter's head. And then now the hitter's got to guess if you can get him 0-1. And then all of a sudden, Barnes can do whatever he wants. But I thought, and the Red Sox did a lot of this over the weekend. They kind of pitched ass backwards a lot. And I think this was one of the adjustments that they were trying to make with Seattle, is they felt like Seattle was onto them, so they started pitching backwards and leading with off-speed stuff. And I want my closer to come in and blow doors. And I'm not saying you can never lead with a first-pitch curve, because you can, especially if you have a good one. And Barnes, at times, you know, again, the command can be off, but Barnes has a good curveball. You know, it's really his key pitch. But, man, his fastball was good. It was moving. He was spotting it. I mean, he was on with the fastball. I'm not a big fan of this Red Sox bullpen. I have major questions about it. But I would tell you that overall, when you look at the series, boy, it's hard to pick at the Red Sox relief corps for the way they pitched. I mean, they had a chance to win.
Other than the opener, the bullpen was definitely better than the starters as a whole.
I mean, they really had a chance to win the last three games, despite digging themselves deficits. They got out in front yesterday, but they then fell behind, and their bullpen allowed them to hang around enough to give them a chance to win the game in the ninth inning. The Mariners tried to give them the game on Saturday night with that clown making 3 errors at third base. And then yesterday, again, you know, you have a walking the bases loaded, walking in a run. Like, there was a threat of them absolutely coming back and winning that game again. They didn't deserve to win them, but they had a chance, and the bullpen was a part of that. Whether it can keep up, I don't know. $64,000 question. 617-779-0985. Guess who is on the mound tonight trying to get the Red Sox back on track? Guess who?
Hey, I'm back.
There you go. I was going to say Murray might even do his impersonation for you. We'll talk about David Price and his season debut next.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape.
And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random 2x found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape.
Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter. Tony Mazzara, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Trying to get out of this jam now. That'll send up Davis, who is single, popped up and grounded out, 1-for-3.
See if Chris is aggressive early in the count. Majority of the time that happens, we're in scoring position late in the game.
Yes, indeed. He smacks it deep. That one's sailing to left, and it is gone. That's a 3-run homer. Can't get more aggressive than that. And it is 4-1 Oakland.
So I don't know how many of you remember that. It was last April. April 22nd, David Price pitched out on the West Coast against the A's. He really had a fabulous game that day.
Was that the Sunday afternoon one?
It was the last game of the series, yes. Okay. Yeah, and Alex Cora left him in to face Chris Davis late in that game, and he pushed him a little bit. I thought he would have pulled Price out of the game by then. He did not. Price stayed in, faced Chris Davis, gave up a 3-run homer to blow the game. Red Sox lost 4-1 in the Oakland A's. And the only reason we're playing that for you today is that Price faces the A's tonight now in his season debut. As it turns out, oddly enough, David Price again can save the Red Sox bacon and get them off the schneid here. And I say save their bacon. It's the fifth game of the year, but play along. They haven't played well. They haven't had a good start yet. I'm going to give you some numbers on the Red Sox starting rotation here in just a second. But Price, Davis. That's your Big Y matchup of the game presented by Big Y World Class Market. Big Y serving the Massachusetts community for over 80 years. Davis in his career against Price, 3-for-9 with a double and a homer. That homer is the only home run he ever hit against David Price. Again, he's only faced him 9 at-bats. I think he's got a couple of walks in there. And that, you know, the three true outcomes that now exist, according to the nerds, the baseball analysts in Major League Baseball, the strikeout, the walk, the home run. Chris Davis is one of the poster boys. He strikes out a ton, he walks a ton, or he hits it out of the ballpark. He, my friends, is a softball player. And this is what the game has deteriorated into, is more and more of the Chris Davis types. So he against Price will be a key matchup out there in Oakland tonight. It's the team's open a 3-game series. I'll just ask Murray quickly and Jimmy Stewart. Have you guys seen anything on Twitter about Bogaerts' comments out at the press conference out in Oakland regarding his nothing?
Just looking at it now.
So again, Xander Bogaerts, and many of you heard this last night, signed to a 6-year, $120 million contract extension that doesn't begin until next season. So this year, Bogaerts is still playing under the $12 million salary that he signed for. And starting next year, he'll go on the books for $20 million a year. Bogaerts is the highest paid shortstop based on annual average value now in Major League history. Okay, up to now, the biggest deal ever awarded a shortstop was Troy Tulowitzki, who got, I shouldn't say the biggest deal ever. Derek Jeter got a big deal with the Yankees. If I remember right, that was, you know what, I'm not even going to guess. But Jeter got a 10-year deal with the Yankees, if I remember, somewhere along the line there. That was for a pretty good chunk of change, $120 million maybe. But based on AAV, Troy Tulowitzki, in terms of actual contract value, got the biggest deal, 10 years and almost $160 million. Bogaerts is now number one AAV, and rest assured that in a couple of years, Francisco Lindor of the Indians, Carlos Correa of the Astros, and probably Corey Seager of the Dodgers, all three of those guys will get more money than Xander Bogaerts has. With regard to the Red Sox pitching staff, Murray, give Red Sox starters a grade for the first series.
F.
Okay, you shouldn't even bat an eye saying that. What if I were to tell you that they are dead last in the major leagues in ERA? It's not even close, in fact. In 4 games, Red Sox starters had an ERA of 13.20.
Ugh.
4 games, they pitched just 15 innings. That's hard to do. 22 hits, 11 walks, 15 strikeouts, and I think they gave up, well, they only gave up 8 of the 11 home runs. The bullpen actually gave up 3 of the home runs in there as well.
And collectively, they've given up more runs, 34, than the Jays, Rays, and Orioles combined, 30.
So you mentioned this earlier, that baseball's a little upside down at the moment. Which, again, you've only played a few games, so that's not unusual. We'll see how it shakes out over a couple of months, 3 months. I think, you know, typically 2 months is a good time to make an evaluation. But I heard something on the midday show today, Murray, that I thought was worth bringing up. Yesterday in Boston, the college basketball game between Duke and Michigan State to go to the Elite Eight actually had a higher rating than the Red Sox game against the Seattle Mariners. Does that surprise you?
No, because it's Elite Eight. Zion Williamson puts asses in seats. He, of course, plays for Duke. And a lot of people, you know, obviously following the tournament and following along their brackets, and they bet on the games. So that was, you know, that was a marquee event. It was the reason it was the last game of the day on the slate of games for the NCAA tournament. So I'm not that surprised. I had both on, but my eyes were more tuned to Duke and Michigan State than they were the Red Sox game.
I mean, Duke was a better game than the Red Sox game.
Yeah.
Right? It was a better game. Way more entertaining. It was close, nip and tuck.
The whole time. There was okay. Like 11 lead changes or something like that.
But I was surprised by it, and I'll tell you why. College basketball in Boston? College basketball is drawing a better rating than the Red Sox?
If Zion Williamson wasn't he's such a transcendent talent, I think that's one of the reasons that it got a high rating. If you're just talking, one of the earlier games or Texas Tech playing, I don't think they're going to end up beating the Red Sox.
So I do wonder, though, whether on some level this is connected to the Red Sox. And then by that, I mean years ago, the Red Sox against college basketball, please.
Oh, would crush it.
Not even worth discussing. Complete and total blowout. But now, on the first weekend of the season, the Red Sox play a game against the Seattle Mariners, and they are beaten in TV ratings by a college basketball game between Duke and Michigan State. It wasn't even Boston College or UMass playing for the right to go to the Final Four. You know, back when UMass had a team, or, you know, and even in those couple of years way back where BC made a run. It's not like you had anything even remotely like that. And so I do think that, you know, this year, this team, and I've sensed a little bit of this week, there was anticipation for the Red Sox going into opening day. But once you get past that, they're on the West Coast. The game started late. You know, yesterday was a 4 o'clock start. But nobody is spending the last weekend of March watching baseball on the West Coast, whether it's the Red Sox or not. So I haven't seen ratings for all of the games during the series with the A's, but yesterday to me was eye-opening. And the Red Sox team didn't do a horrible number. It was in the 5.5 range, I think. But basketball was over a 7. College basketball beat the Red Sox on the first weekend of the baseball season. There was a time, I think, where that never...
That would never, ever happen. But again, I think you might be underselling the Zion Williamson factor there. You know, I think that guy gets people, even the most casual of fans, to tune in because he's been that amazing to watch.
No, and the next time we see him, he'll be in the NBA.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, because Coach K's an idiot and wouldn't run the last play to him, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay, so we mentioned earlier, Celtics, Miami Heat, coming up here at 7:30 on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We are your home for Celtics basketball and will continue to be throughout the postseason, which is not that far away. Celtics final regular season game just a week from now. Next Tuesday is their regular season finale. Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell, will have Celtics pregame for you. That's coming up next. He'll take you right into the 7:30 tip right here on 98.5. Everyone else, we'll see you tomorrow.
Problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape.
And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape.
Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.